We'll call upon our brother Jeff Hibbs then to give us some words of exhortation. Brother Jeff.
Good morning. Stephen was a man who certainly was ready to give an answer, wasn't he? Stephen was a man full of conviction. And he knew who he was speaking to. And this was a man who knew that his life was on the line. We're not going to spend all of our time in Acts. In fact, I just have some portions of his speech, of his plea to the Jewish leaders at the time that I'd like to pull out and focus on. And the first portion is in the first few verses, and he speaks of Abraham. He speaks of Abraham in verse 3, and reminds the people, reminds the Jewish leaders, reminds those who are seeking his life, or rather his death. He reminds them that Abraham was told by God, leave your country and your people and go to a land I will show you. Go to a land I will show you. Further on in the chapter, not too much further on actually, just in verse 5, it says he gave him no inheritance there, not even a foot of ground. It talks about the promises that he talks about the promises that were made to Abraham. And in verse 6, God spoke to him in this way: your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own. They will be enslaved and mistreated for 400 years. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out of that country and worship me in this place. So two references here to a place, to a country, to a land I will show you. Now, this comes up in our Deuteronomy reading. I'd like to go over to Deuteronomy 16. In Deuteronomy 16, we see this idea of a place, a dwelling, some place the Lord will choose, repeated over and over and over in the few chapters, in the chapters before chapter 16. And here in chapter 16, verse 2, we read, sacrifice as the Passover to the Lord your God, an animal from your flock or herd, at the place the Lord will choose as a dwelling for his name. And out of this verse, I see two things. One is, and we've already referenced Abraham on this, is faith. Faith that God will choose this place. Abraham was told to leave his country, didn't know where he was headed yet. God said, leave your country and go to a place I will show you. It's a rather vague instruction as we read it. And so it speaks to us of a faith. And I think this is something that was encouraged of the people of Israel. They had to have the same faith. And throughout their wanderings, they had to have this faith that God would lead them to this place. Now, the second part, the second idea that I take out of this verse is this idea of obedience, because God is choosing a place. It's not up to us. It wasn't up to Israel where this place would be. It was a place that God would choose. And so there's two ideas that come out of this phrase, out of this instruction rather. Go to the place the Lord will choose as a dwelling for his name. Now, I'd just like to go down to verse... No, actually, I'd like to go to chapter 12 of Deuteronomy. Back a few pages. We have in chapter 12 and verse 5 the same instruction coming out. You are to seek the Lord, the place the Lord your God will choose from among all the tribes, to put his name there for his dwelling. To that place you must go. And so this isn't just a place the Lord will choose. This is a place where God will put his name. This is where he will be known. This is where his character will be revealed. It's more than just a place. You are to seek the place the Lord your God will choose. Okay, also in verse 26, just jump over to 26 in the same chapter. But take your consecrated things and go, and whatever you have vowed to give, and go to the place the Lord will choose. And so what was this place? What was the place they were of worship? Well, I'd suggest that one of the places was the tabernacle. They were to go to the tabernacle. This is where they saw the glory of God in the cloud. This was a central place of worship throughout their wanderings. So this is one place where they physically saw evidence of God's glory. They saw that he was dwelling with them. Let's also look, though, at the cautionary messages in this chapter. Verse 13 says, be careful not to sacrifice your burnt offerings anywhere you please. So there's a condition here, and the condition is, again, this idea of obedience, that the Lord will choose the place, and it's not up to you. You have to follow his special instruction. It's on God's terms and not your own. Offer them only at the place the Lord will choose in one of your tribes, and there observe everything I command you. Also in verse 4, you must not worship the Lord your God in their way. Now, what is he talking about there? Well, he had just told Israel here, well, it's talking about idolatry in the first few verses of chapter 12. And about the nations around them and how they served other gods and they raised idols to Molech and all the detestable things that were done. And not only done in secret, but if you look up into verse 2, they were done under every spreading tree where the nations you are dispossessing worship their gods. So this is something that was done in plain sight. It involved prostitution. It involved sacrificing children to Molech, and God's saying, we're not going to even look the part. This is something completely different. And it's not on your terms, it's on mine. Chapter 15, verse 20, also brings out the same idea, and we'll come back to chapter 15. Oop, I missed a verse here. Chapter 12, 31 also says, you must not worship the Lord your God in their way, because in worshiping their gods, they do all kinds of detestable things the Lord hates. They even burn their sons and daughters in the fire as sacrifices to their gods. And then when we come to chapter 15, verse 20, again, God tells them, each year, you and your family are to eat them, and it's talking about the firstborn of their flocks here. Eat them in the presence of the Lord your God at the place he will choose. So I think it's pretty clear that God has given them instruction and told them, this is at the place I will choose under my conditions. And it's completely different from the rest of the world. The rest of the world does whatever they want in every place they want for everyone to see. But God says, this is different. When you come to worship me, do it in the place that I choose. Now I'd like to go over to the Psalms, because the Psalms have a little bit of, in Psalm 26, David mentions this place. And the question comes to us again, well, what is this place? What does this have to do with us? Why are we concerned about the tabernacle today? Where is this place? Where do we have to be? So when we come to Psalm 26 and verse 8, David says, I love the house where you live, O Lord, the place where your glory dwells. And this is something that God was trying to teach Israel, was that it's not just I'm telling you to be in this place, I want you to want to be in this place where I choose. And David had learned that. David wanted to be with God. And he says, I love the house where you live, O Lord, the place your glory dwells. At this time, David, the tabernacle was still there. The temple hadn't been built yet. So we could take this quite literally and say David is referring to the tabernacle. Or perhaps there's something more. And I think there is when we come to apply it to ourselves. And let's go over to Psalm 78 for a moment. Psalm 78, God chooses to dwell. He makes some choices as to how his glory will be revealed. And if we go in at verse 68, or 67, he says, he rejected the tents of Joseph, did not choose the tribe of Ephraim, but he chose the tribe of Judah, Mount Zion, which he loved. He built his sanctuary like the heights, like the earth that he established forever. He chose David, his servant, and took him from the sheep pens. And it goes on to talk about David as a shepherd, tending the sheep of his people Israel, of Israel, his inheritance, in verse 71 and 72. So he chose Judah. He built his sanctuary. Well, Solomon built his temple, didn't he? But it's talking about God building his sanctuary, like the heights, like the earth that he established forever. And he chose David, his servant. In Zechariah 2:12, it says that he chose Jerusalem again. God told Israel, instructed them about places, about physical locations, telling them this is where you need to be, asking them to have faith, to believe, to obey. Where do we want to be? Where do we need to be? Is it a physical place? Is it this building? Does this building have some significance that we need to be aware of? I don't think so. This building is just a building. When we ask ourselves where we need to be, it's where our mind and our heart, our motivations need to be. And God's not instructing us to go to a physical place, but instructing us to be in the place where he chooses, which is with him. In other words, adopting his mind, the mind of God, the mind of Christ, who we've come here to remember today. Not worshiping God in the world's way, however they choose, but his way. I'd like to go back to Deuteronomy 16. In Deuteronomy 16, verse 12, they're told to remember that they were slaves in Egypt. Now, this might seem like a bit of a tangent at the moment, but I'll try and line it up for you. Deuteronomy 16, verse 12 says, remember that you were slaves in Egypt and follow carefully these decrees. Well, there's that element of obedience. But the reason they were to follow their decrees, by the way this verse reads, was because they were slaves in Egypt. Well, if we just go back to chapter 15, the end of chapter 15, and verse 15 actually, says, "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. This is why I give you this command today. Remember that the Lord your God redeemed you." And what's the command that he's giving them here? Well, he's talking to them about freeing servants, about freeing slaves. And this isn't just some section that he's giving them on, okay, well, you're going to have slaves, and this is how you should treat them, and this is how they should behave, and this is how you free them. He's not just giving them mechanics of how the laws of slaves work. He's telling them, remember that you were slaves and I redeemed you. I redeemed you. And it goes on in verse 16. Let's just read 16 and 17 together. "But if your servant says to you, 'I do not want to leave you,' because he loves you and your family is well off with you," pardon me, "then take an awl and push it through his earlobe, into the door, and he will become your servant for life. Do the same for your maidservant." And so I think what God is telling them is, not only is he giving them a set of rules on how to treat slaves and how to behave with slaves and how to dedicate a slave, he's saying, this is you. I redeemed you from Egypt. Please choose me for life. He wants all of Israel to be putting that all through their ears and dedicating themselves to him, to choose him. God chose Israel, but the faithful Israel were the ones who chose him as a lifelong service. In other words, God says to them, "I've freed you. Now choose me. Choose to serve me for your whole life." And we're reminded of Christ saying, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." It was a huge contrast to their slavery in Egypt. It wasn't just another set of rules and slavery in that way. God wanted them to be his slaves, his servants, willingly, but it was a completely different kind of slavery. Israel was under the world's oppression. And I can't help but identify with that. Not that I've been a slave by any means, but if we take that to the next level, we can be slaves to this world, can't we? Unless we leave it behind and choose God, who has redeemed us in Christ. And the yoke is much easier and the burden much lighter, because we have faith and believe that he will work with us if we choose him. And so we come back to the question of, are we where God would choose us? And let's go back into Acts as we begin to wrap up. Acts 7. And near the end of Stephen's speech, or the middle, verse 44, Stephen talks about the tabernacle. And the leaders and the people of that day, and even the disciples, admired the temple of the time. It's gold and it looked nice. And you know, you can't help but look out over a cityscape and think, oh, that looks nice. But they were admiring the temple. and not seeing their God. In verse 44, it says, "Our forefathers had the tabernacle of the testimony with them in the desert. It had been made as God directed Moses according to the pattern he had seen." Going down to verse 46. And speaking of David, it says, "Who enjoyed God's favor and asked that he might provide a dwelling for the God of Jacob. But it was Solomon who built the house for him. However, the Most High does not live in houses made by men. As the prophet says, 'Heaven is my throne, the earth is my footstool. What kind of house will you build for me?' says the Lord." In other words, the temple was not for the benefit of God. This building isn't for God's benefit. The places are for our benefit. God has chosen a place, but he doesn't dwell in one place. He goes on to say, "Where will my resting place be? Has not my hand made all these things? They're already God's." In fact, if we go over to Isaiah, Stephen quoted Isaiah 66 and verses 1 and 2, but he didn't finish verse 2. The whole of verse 2 says, "Has not my hand made all these things, and so they came into being, declares the Lord? This is the one I esteem, he who is humble and contrite in spirit, and trembles at my word." And this speaks to us more of where we need to be in our minds and in our hearts, and not a physical place. God's real dwelling is in each of us, if we are humble and contrite in spirit, if we are as described here in the end of verse 2, this is who he has chosen. And who was more so this way than Christ? Again, Jesus talked of the beautiful, or Jesus' disciples talked of this beautiful temple, and Jesus responded, well, to the leaders at that time, "Destroy this temple, and I'll raise it again in 3 days. That's from John 2. And he was speaking of the temple of his body, where God dwelt. That was where God dwelt. Not that God was there, not that God was inside Jesus in some strange way, but Jesus had said, well, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And he could say that because he had fulfilled and lived God's character. It wasn't shown. God's dwelling wasn't shown by the beautiful temple of the time, by the external gold, but by the character of a perfect man. And this was Emmanuel, God with us, where God chose to put his name, where he chose to dwell. If you have seen me, you have seen the Father. God chose Jesus. Jesus chose his Father. And they were one in purpose and one in mind. Now, last week, Mike was speaking of a fruit. And I think this joins in with what we're talking about this morning, with what we're considering. And I'm just going to read to you a small section out of Colin Attridge's book, The Fruit of the Spirit. Our aim, too, is to get ourselves in tune with the thinking of the Father. And we will achieve success in this enterprise to whatever degree we apply ourselves to the Spirit Word. The Scriptures are the only place in this world where the mind of God, and subsequently of Christ, is shown. Delight and meditation in the Word will slowly, almost imperceptibly, produce the fruit of the Spirit for us, where no amount of willpower can. In other words, we can't just decide, oh, I'm going to have this fruit today, and you have it. It It's a process. Fruit is not summoned into existence, he says, but we can create the most favorable conditions for growth. And so, let us, each of us, choose our God. Choose to serve him. And let that all go through our earlobes to dedicate ourselves for our entire lifetime, willingly, that God's name would dwell in our hearts, that we would be temples of God. And God will choose us, and our final dwelling place will be with him for eternity.